I'm Colin Ellis, and for 30 years I was a permanent employee of other people's cultures. What I wanted to know more than anything else during that time was how to create a great culture myself. So I wrote a book called Culture Fix, which is the world's first how-to guide for building great workplace culture. And in this, the Culture Makers podcast, I get industry leaders from around the world to expand on the ideas I wrote about in the book and to get them to share actionable things that you can do to create a great place to work yourself. And remember, listening is good, but action is better. Hi everyone, in this episode of the Culture Makers podcast, I'm talking to Geraldine Fauville. Geraldine is an assistant professor in education, communication and learning at the University of Gothenburg in Sweden. She specializes in research that focuses on the role that immersive technologies can play in promoting ocean and environmental literacies. She is currently engaged in researching the much talked about effects of Zoom fatigue. That is the physical and emotional effects of video conferencing, which I am fascinated to hear more about. Hello, Geraldine. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Colin. Thank you for having me here.
That was a very slight delay because you're not in Australia. Whereabouts in the world are you?
I am currently in Sweden.
Never made it to Sweden. What reasons would I come to Sweden? What's good about Sweden?
The landscape is amazing. There is, you know, a lot of nature. So for hiking, it's perfect. There is kilometers of coast. So it's really good if you like the sea, the ocean. A lot of lakes as well. So yeah, very nice country.
You didn't realize that this podcast you'd be selling Sweden to the audience, but I'm sure people are like, oh my God, I would love to go to Sweden. But we were talking just before, and Sweden's not home originally. Belgium was home originally. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm born in Belgium, which is a much smaller country than Sweden, only 60 kilometers of coast, so very different.
Yeah, very different. Yeah, I have been to Belgium a few times, mainly because of the beer, such is the very English way of things. Now, Geraldine, I've got you on to talk about research because you guys have done a really great paper about Zoom fatigue that I know people are going to be fascinated by. But before I get there, it'd be great to know a little bit about you and kind of your background and kind of where did it all start for you? University? What did you do at university? How did you get to do what you do now?
Well, it's a kind of a complicated path for me. I studied marine biology in Belgium. Then I moved to Sweden and starting as education project manager at the University of Gothenburg. Then from there, I did my PhD in education, looking at marine education and digital technologies. After my PhD, I spent 2 years at Stanford at the Virtual Human Interaction Lab founded by Professor Billinson, where I studied the use of virtual reality for marine education.
Don't go any further. Yeah. I need to ask you about that, about virtual reality. So when was this?
Yeah, so I was there in 2018, 2020. The idea behind virtual reality for marine education is that the ocean covers 70% of the planet. Our daily behaviors impact the ocean in a negative way most of the time. And people need to care about the ocean, but it's very difficult to care about something that you don't experience or that you are like far away from. And it's difficult for people to go on the beach every day or even go underwater. So instead of bringing the people to the ocean, if it's not possible, you bring the ocean to the people and you immerse them in this underwater world with virtual reality.
Wow, that sounds absolutely incredible. And so who was it for then, the technology? Where did you take it?
It's for everyone. So we took it to schools, to conferences, a lot of, you know, people visit the Virtual Human Interaction Lab. It's one of the leading research place for virtual reality.
And so virtual, I certainly listen to lots of people talk about virtual reality and how it will impact the world of work. Is this something that you see becoming more mainstream over the kind of next 3 to 5 years, do you think?
Yeah, definitely. We see like over like the last 7 years, the cost of the equipment has decreased so dramatically. So the equipment that was used at the lab for 6 or 7 years ago cost about $140,000. And you needed this massive computer. Now for $500, you have a headset and you can go anywhere with it, to schools, to, you know, conferences, and have it for anyone to try.
That is absolutely amazing. So we're only going to build on it and find more uses for it. You know, my son has a PlayStation VR headset, and I find it's such an immersive technology, and its use is kind of limitless, really, isn't it?
Right. It's really the strength of VR is that you have this experience that feels real. It's a visceral experience that, you know, often you cannot have otherwise.
Yeah, I did some snorkeling recently in summer here in Australia. We went to the Great Barrier Reef for the first time, and I've never done anything like that before. And you really get this kind of deep appreciation of the ocean, of the life within it. It's only when you experience that that it really spurs you into action. It spurs you into more education, which I'm assuming is something that you found with this particular piece of work as well, right?
Right, exactly. We've seen that having people experience nature or the environment or the ocean in VR has an impact on their knowledge about that impact, but also how much they care and their behavior.
Yeah, fascinating. Absolutely incredible. And so what came after that? And then I'll circle back and talk a little bit more about the research.
Right. So in March 2020, I was, you know, a postdoctoral researcher at the Virtual Human Interaction Lab studying VR and marine education. And suddenly COVID hit, everyone was sent home. There was no way for us to put the headset on people's head anymore. So we simply had to shift our research. And we started working on Zoom fatigue in May 2020. As you know, the member of our research team were talking about how exhausted they felt to participate in so many video conferences. And then on the media, we started to hear the term of Zoom fatigue, and we got interested. We realized that there was no research on the topic, and so we decided to start studying this new phenomena.
Absolutely right. There's no research on the topic, because as a public speaker, as someone who delivers culture programs for major organizations, one of the things that I'm always on the lookout for, of course, is good research, good data, which I then share. I always attribute the researchers because they do such an incredible job. But there was nothing on Zoom fatigue or the kind of the tiredness that we feel through always looking at a screen. There was absolutely nothing. And then I came across the paper, and just as an extrovert, sitting down and reading a research paper is really hard for me. Geraldine, not suggesting the content isn't great, it's just tough for me to do. But I just read it in one sitting on Zoom fatigue. So how many people worked on the paper? It's great to get an insight into kind of researchers. And how do you guys all work together? Are you all, well, you were obviously all virtual here. Are you all in different parts of the world?
Okay, so this research is a collaboration between two labs in the Department of Communication at Stanford University. The Virtual Human Interaction Lab, founded by Professor Billenson, and the Social Media Lab, founded by Professor Hancock. So we have Professor Hancock, Professor Billenson, Dr. Kieros, and PhD student Mufan Lua, who are working all together on this project. And so we created what we call the ZEF scale, Z-E-F, for Zoom Exhaustion and Fatigue Scale. And we ran 5 studies with more than 3,000 participants. And the goal was to create a tool to be able to measure someone's Zoom fatigue.
So the 3,000 people, so where are they in the world? How do you get in touch with them? How are they selected? I'm fascinated about that.
They are all around the world, and we got a lot of people interested in this research because the media got interested. So every time we talk to any journalist, we ask them to share the link, and that's why we keep recruiting people. So I'm telling you, for the paper we already published, we had 3,000 participants. That was a month ago. Now we have more than 15,000 people who've participated.
Wow. So will there be a follow-up paper, Geraldine? Will there be more on this?
Plenty of papers. We are working very hard on the second paper, and we have like collected data for at least three more papers after that one. And something else that's very important is that it's not just about us. Our tool, the ZEVScale, is available for any researcher. So we have like so many researchers contacting us and asking us very kindly if they can use or even translate the ZEVScale. So it's going to be like so many papers very soon. And we're going to understand the Zoom fatigue concept much more in a few months.
Well, I want to say a big thank you for doing the paper to you and the team, because for public speakers and people who write books and stuff, it's totally invaluable. The research itself is absolutely fascinating. Can you give me a, do you want to give, I mean, I've got loads of questions having read the paper, but give me a sense of the findings and the things that you really, I guess, landed on with regards to this kind of concept called Zoom fatigue.
Okay, so in the paper where we created the ZEVScale, we find out that the more people use video conference, the longer these video conferences are, the more people experience Zoom fatigue, which kind of makes sense. But, you know, we are at the very beginning. So that these are things that we need to establish from the beginning. We also showed that when you experience more Zoom fatigue, you have a more negative attitude toward video conference in general. So as I said, we use these five studies to create the ZEVScale. And the ZEVScale includes 15 questions about how you feel after video conferencing. And all together, these 15 items measure to what extent you're suffering from Zoom fatigue. But these 15 items also account for five different types of fatigue. So there is general fatigue, visual fatigue, emotional fatigue, social and motivational. And actually, so there's been two different papers published. So there is the paper about the ZEVScale, Professor Belenson also identified four suspected causes of Zoom fatigue based on previous research in psychology and communication.
Yeah, and so those four things for me were really, really interesting, which were eye gaze, cognitive load, all day mirror, which I love that one, and reduced mobility. And so eye gaze, and I think I read this in Professor Bellinson's paper, where he talked about the fact that it's almost like being in an elevator with someone because we're so close to the camera. Is that right, in terms of eye gaze and the fact that we're just super close, or it feels like we're really close to people?
Yeah. So in this one, there are two different aspects. There is like the staring part and there is the closeness. So concerning the staring part, so during an in-person meeting, people will stare at you when you're speaking. When someone else takes over, you're not the center of the attention anymore. And research has shown that social anxiety is very common. But then during a video conference, regardless if you're the speaker or not, it seems like all the eyes are on you all the time. So you're constantly in this stressful position of the speaker. So it can be really intense, especially if you have a lot of video conferences. And then there is the size of the head. That's also important. And that depends on your computer screen, your settings, and so on. But the other participants' face appeared to be very large. And this large size is like the real world equivalent of someone standing uncomfortably close to you, like if you were like invading your personal space. And this kind of physical proximity between two people is perceived by the brain as a situation that will lead to mating or to conflict. So it's very intense. So in this case, to kind of, address these large faces and the staring, Jeremy Belenson's recommendation is to decrease the size of, the video conference window. So you don't have these big faces anymore. It's like smaller squares.
Yeah. And I think in that particular thing about eye gaze, he said that the amount of eye gaze on Zoom is 8 times higher than normal face-to-face interaction. Ever since reading the paper, for every video call that I've been on, and I'm running another virtual program shortly, which fascinating the way that I've used the research, is that I'm really noticing amazing, just the size of people's heads, like the depth. And I'm thinking, yeah, that's just not normal. It's that there's no way we would do that in real life, right?
Right. And another way to address it is to have an external keyboard. So yourself, you're putting more space between you and your camera, but also the screen. So you kind of step back a bit.
Yeah. So the second one was cognitive load, which is much more about, from memory, it's much more about how we process information based on what we see. When we're face to face, it's easier to pick up signals and signs. Have I got that right?
Yeah, absolutely. So exactly as you say, when you're interacting in person, most people have this instinctive understanding of nonverbal behavior, like, such as your intonation or the orientation of your body. And these are very important cues in conversation. So these nonverbal behaviors help us understand when we can interrupt someone who's speaking without being rude, or it helps us also show interest or lack of interest, or encourage a speaker maybe to move on to another topic. But during video conference, you only see the head and the shoulders of the other participant. So a lot of the nonverbal communication is lost. And that creates two problems. So the first is for you to understand what the other participants mean behind their words. You will need to constantly monitor the nonverbal behavior much more actively. You will need to think about it much more than you would do if it was a face-to-face situation with the nonverbal behavior just flowing between the two people. And then in order for you to communicate this kind of cues to the other participant, you will also need to intensify the cues. Like, for example, by nodding more vigorously, as I'm doing right now, so that the other person will catch what that means. And there is research that has shown that video conference is more taxing for the brain than audio-only conversation, where you do not need at all to worry about the body language of the other speakers or your own. You can just focus on what's available, which is the audio part.
Two things that I really picked up from the cognitive load is this concept of exaggeration, where we nod vigorously. I have found myself doing it on this call with you, as I'm saying something, I'm like really nodding, say, yes, I agree, which happens a lot, right? It's just like a bunch of nodding dogs on these Zoom calls. The other thing, and I think I picked this out of the research, correct me if I'm wrong, is that we speak louder. Is that true? Is that something that the research has shown, that we speak louder on video calls?
Yeah, some research has shown that we speak 15% louder when we are on video conference, which I've experienced. Like, my kids are homeschooling for the moment, and they will tell me like, oh my God, you're speaking so loud now. Yeah.
I hear people, so kind of where our house is here, there's a pavement outside, and people with their AirPods in really shouting. I'm like, dude, the AirPods, from what I understand, are pretty good. You really don't need to shout. All right, so that's cognitive load. All day mirror. Tell me about all day mirror. So I love this, but if you can explain it, I think it's fascinating, the all day mirror.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so when you are on a video conference with your camera on, you see the image from your own camera. So it's like having a mirror in front of you the whole time. So it would be the equivalent of spending a day of your life with your assistant following you around and holding a mirror in front of your face every time you interact with someone else. That would be very problematic. And researchers have shown that seeing your own image leads to self-evaluation, which also leads to negative effects such as bad mood and anxiety, especially for women. So here, what's important to know is that for some video conference platform, you can disable the cell view. So your camera is still on, the other participant can see you, but you don't have the window with your own image.
Yeah, which is a great suggestion. I think there are I think there are some people who secretly like looking at themselves, but that's okay. We're not going to judge. I think there are some people who like to see themselves. You constantly see them, you know, kind of touching their hair and stuff. But it's true, right? Hadn't thought of it until I saw that. I hate the sound of my own voice. I hate seeing myself on video, which is ironic because I do lots of videos. But watching them back, and when you see that picture of yourself, it does cause that self-evaluation. Who wants to spend all day looking at themselves in the mirror, you know? The last one was on reduced mobility. Now, this is something that very real to me because I've had a shoulder bursitis during lockdown because of reduced mobility. I've had neck pain because of reduced mobility. Because what we're doing in front of a camera is not natural, right? We're in unnatural seating positions.
Totally, yes. So during in-person meetings or when you're on phone call, people have the option to move around. In face-to-face meeting, people can stretch, get up to write on the whiteboard, or go get a drink. And during a phone call, you can actually be engaged in a lot of different tasks while being fully engaged with the phone call. So you can walk around, you can water your plant. There are like a lot of different tasks that you can engage in while you still paying attention to the phone call. And motion is very important for learning, for creativity, and for brain performance. But during a video conference, when the camera is on, there is this expectation that you will stay in the camera view facing the screen. So this really decreases the range of motion you can engage in. Like it feels like you're trapped in the camera view. Something that really helped me, I had also neck and back problem at the beginning of COVID. A standing desk saved my life for the mobility part. So I'm standing right now and I feel like I can move much more than I would if I was seated.
Yeah. So, and I think one of the things that I've been talking about recently is organizations who are making this shift to greater working from home, which I think is fabulous. I think flexible working, we've allowed old fashioned behaviors to get in the way of flexible working for far too long, but organizations have to take kind of workplace health as seriously as they did in the office for people back home, right? Because I think, again, correct me if I'm wrong, Geraldine, but we're lazier at home. We don't sit upright. We'll sit on the bed. We'll sit on the sofa. We'll sit in a chair and kind of have our laptop on our laps, kind of looking down. So there's a real danger, I think, with greater kind of working away from the office, that it could affect our physical health, right?
Right, absolutely. And that's also one of the goals with the Zeff scale, which is available for anyone to take. And you answer these 15 questions and then you have some feedback. So we give you a Zeff score and then a score for each of the five kinds of fatigue. And we hope that with this kind of information, people can think about their video conference behavior and develop, you know, simple strategy to decrease their own Zoom fatigue. But it's also important for companies and organizations to change their culture around video conference and, you know, to make their employees less fatigued. And it might be, you know, it's okay if you don't use your camera. You don't need to have your camera on all the time, but also being more mindful of when and why you use video conference. Maybe this can be an email or a phone call. So be a bit more like thinking a bit more about why we use this tool and is it the best tool for what we're trying to achieve right now.
Fabulous. So I can't wait to read more about the Zeff scale. What we'll do, Geraldine, is we'll share your paper, which talks through the five dimensions, right? Social, emotional, visual, motivational. Which one have I missed out? Oh, general. Is that right?
Visual.
Yeah. Is the research still open, Geraldine? Can people still contribute?
Absolutely. The survey is open for anyone. And we regularly, you know, add and test different questions. But yes, people are more than welcome to use it. It's going to help them. Yeah, it's going to help them and it's going to help us with our research.
Great. Well, we'll definitely share that. I just want to ask one more question, which is something that you mentioned at the start, which is part of the Zeff research. And that is that because of this fatigue, it's giving people a negative attitude towards video conferencing as a whole. Is that what you said? Is that what you found?
Yeah. So we asked few questions, like three questions about how people, you know, liked or enjoyed this video conference. And we could see that if people were experiencing more Zoom fatigue, they would have a more negative attitude toward video conference.
Well, we can't have that, especially in our flexible world where we're going to become, I guess, better at managing when we commute, when we don't commute. Geraldine, it has been fabulous having you on the show. Fascinating. I can't wait to read more about all of this. Yes, and I want to say a big thank you for joining us on the Culture Makers podcast today.
Well, thank you for having me with you today, Colin.
Thanks so much for listening to the Culture Makers podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to get notified when new episodes are released. If you've been inspired by today's guest, please share the link with your friends, family, or networks. If you'd like to continue your learning journey, then why not join our virtual community of Culture Makers, where our members share ideas to help them get a little bit better every day. You can find out more at www.culturemakers.community.